Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls Media Roundtable. Today, we're discussing a new investigation from ProPublica called Inside Trump's Failed Hunt for Non-Citizen Voters. The Trump administration has placed election deniers and political allies in key positions at the Justice Department, Homeland Security investigations, and other agencies involved in overseeing elections. Homeland Security investigations is a massive federal law enforcement agency, and they've deployed their tech platform to find non-citizens on voter rolls, despite warnings from agency insiders that it would lead to an ungodly number of false positives. ProPublica reports that despite intense White House pressure, the effort has produced only a few dozen non-citizen voter prosecutions nationwide and even fewer convictions. Today, we're joined by two of the ProPublica reporters who worked on this investigation and other stories about Trump's plans for elections in the midterms. We begin with Jen Fifield, a ProPublica reporter covering election-related issues, voting rights, and threats to democracy. Jen is a former senior reporter at VoteBeat.org, where she covered elections, voting, and threats to democracy in Arizona. Hi, Jen. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you. We love having ProPublica reporters on. You are all doing such incredible work. And at a time when there's so much chaos out there, a lot of criticism of the media, whenever we have investigative reporters like you on, I always like to ask about the work that you all do, because some of these investigations can take months, even more than a year. So can you tell us a bit about what ProPublica is up to these days, some of the stories that stand out for you?
Sure. Thank you so much. So ProPublica is an independent nonprofit newsroom, and we just focus on investigative journalism across the country. We're based in New York City, but there's reporters all across the country really digging deep into issues that matter. Our mission is to expose abuses of power and betrayals of public trust, accountability journalism, and spotlighting wrongdoing. We've focused a lot on the second Trump administration's efforts to, like you said, overhaul elections on our team. But outside of that, really, you know, the increase in immigration enforcement has been a huge focus of ProPublica's in the last year, and any other thing that, you know, has upended certain industries like healthcare decisions in Congress, and environmental and education decisions across the country.
And as I said, in some cases, it takes months, even more than a year, to produce these investigations.
It does. The story that we're going to focus on today about non-citizen voting, I believe, you know, we got the first idea for it back in January. So this is stuff that, you know, we have contact sheets full of, you know, hundreds of people that we've reached out to for stories. And I think it's hard to keep track under the Trump administration with all the changes. But one thing we do is kind of just dig in and let other news pass us by while we try to figure out what just happened.
And just to read a couple of your latest pieces from other colleagues, they rebuilt after Texas's devastating floods, then their home flooded again. Missouri Republicans are trying to repeal abortion rights by leaning into anti-trans sentiment. This coach is banned from working with kids. Why is he still coaching? This one I really want to listen to because you also have a podcast, The True Story of Why Immigration Agents Raided a Chicago Apartment Building. You all have done really amazing reporting on that one. And then I'm also so interested in this because we do so many shows on the military budget, and it just doesn't get the deep dive reporting that I think it deserves. But your colleagues, Jesse Coburn and Ruth Talbot, have a piece, this is recent, The $1 trillion Black Box. The U.S. military budget is vast and opaque. Projects touted as engineering marvels end up facing years of delays and ballooning costs. ProPublica has launched a series to report on the Pentagon spending. So, Jen, we're definitely going to have those reporters on. Can you tell us how is it that you are all able to spend so much time digging into one issue?
Well, I think it's just our model. We are given tremendous time and resources through, our nonprofit model that takes donations from across the country, people that support independent journalism, really seeing the importance of people that know subjects well and have reported on them for a long time. And are, have the contacts and the stamina to produce stories that no one else can.
Well, thank you again to you and your colleagues for the great reporting that you all do. It also really changes laws. I mean, that's how powerful this kind of investigative reporting is. The pieces that you and your colleagues have done on the midterms is also so crucial because this could be the most critical midterm election in the US, given what's happening, the economy, the war on Iran, the deadly attacks on immigrants. There's so much at stake here. And there's a good chance that Trump's Republican Party could lose its grip on the House, maybe even the Senate. So a lot is riding on these midterms. And as you report, Trump is once again working very, very hard to cast doubt on election integrity. You've been covering these issues for years. What would you say is different in Trump's second term when it comes to election integrity, and what concerns you the most about the upcoming midterms?
Well, I think in the first Trump administration, there were some efforts to try to take more control over elections, which are run at the local level and the state level. These are the people that control your voter rolls, decide how and when you vote and where. That's all decided really by people within your own state. And in the first administration, you saw Trump trying to do things like seize voter rolls or search for non-citizens to try to prove his claims of fraud, but that didn't really get going as much as I think he would have preferred. And then, I guess it wasn't as organized. He didn't up until the end, until 2020, he wasn't really firing people who didn't go along with his ideas, especially on elections. And this time around, it's the complete opposite. As soon as he took office, he started dismantling any election protection he saw at the federal level, had worked against him in his efforts to overturn the 2020 results when he lost. So cybersecurity support across the country was immediately dismantled. People within the Department of Justice that had protected public integrity in prosecutions, that team was completely disbanded. We had other federal agencies that monitor threats to elections from outside nations, and those teams were disbanded. And in their place, he started putting all of these officials that he knew would go along with his claims and would pursue his mission. And so that's the major concern from state officials is that there's just more federal interference. There's people in the federal government who are going to go along with Trump's claims, do things like the FBI raid in Georgia on their election center. We had a similar subpoena here in Maricopa County, from the FBI, and we've seen all across the country agents trying to pursue his mission on voting. And I think there's just major concern that this is supposed to be, a state role. States are supposed to decide how their voters vote. And now we have an absolute a power grab coming from the federal side.
And experts tell you that the midterms will serve as an unprecedented stress test of the integrity of US elections. You spoke with California Senator Alex Padilla, who's been at the forefront of pushing back against Trump's actions on elections. And he said, "Our election system withstood Trump's attacks following the 2020 election, but this will be an even tougher test, with more election deniers having access to federal power than ever before." And Jen, the first time around, a number of Republicans who were Trump supporters stood up to him and said, "No, you did not win this election." But as you report, you and your colleague Doug Bock-Clark wrote a piece back in April called Inside Trump's Effort to Take Over the Midterms. You report that at least 75 career election staff are gone. Two dozen appointees, including many from the election denial movement, have been hired, and 10 helped try to overturn the 2020 vote. So, can you talk about the major changes with election staffers that have happened?
Sure. So we have people, we have the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. It's a long-winded name for, watching over things like our water systems in the United States, anything that's deemed critical infrastructure, and that includes elections. We have people now in those roles in the Department of Homeland Security who have spread election lies. Who are working on, it's almost like this team has formed across the Department of Justice, the Department of Homeland Security to enforce all of Trump's latest executive orders. He's had two executive orders that try to set new rules on eligibility for voting, on voting systems that can be used, on now what how you, the USPS processes mail ballots. And there's this team within the government that has been appointed by Trump. Political appointees that would normally be typical career staff that are really trying to push for these missions. When they get blocked, they move forward in different ways. And so that's what we've been watching and hearing over months is the different ways they're trying to pursue these missions.
And tell us more about the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. You and your colleagues report that it was a go-to shop for many states looking for help to ensure that their elections were not hacked, targeted, or undermined by cyber attacks or foreign interference. Tell us more about this, the CISA.
So Trump actually set that up back in his first term after concerns of, the 2016 election not being fair. It was a federal agency established to try to oversee any physical or cyber vulnerabilities in our election machines, in our election systems, in our election offices. And local officials had really come to rely on their advice for how to make sure that, their passwords weren't getting hacked, things like that on the ground that a lot of local offices don't have the money or expertise to know. And it was this kind of network that kept an eye on any threats coming in from outside the US and relayed that to local officials. They could talk in a chat group on election day about threats that were coming in. And this is something that, if there's a bomb threat, they, would post, "Did you all receive the bomb threat as well?" Those kind of messages, that entire system, the entire structure, and all the staff that were working on that are now gone.
You spoke with Kathy Buchvar, an election security expert who served as Pennsylvania's Secretary of State from 2019 to 2021. And she said it took years of dedicated bipartisan cross-sector partnership to build the security infrastructure we've had. And dismantling CISA leaves a gaping hole. We are making the job of securing our democracy exponentially harder. What else are you hearing from election officials about this?
Well, they're still receiving, updates from the federal government today where they're saying, maybe we will come in and help you all out. I think that for the last 2 years, there's been a lot of trust broken between the federal and state officials that used to do this work together. Whereas now, when help is offered, there's a little bit of mistrust, or people on either side think that there's bad intentions. We know that some officials have been told that in within CISA, elections, quote, are a toxic poison. They don't want to touch it because they don't know if they'll get in trouble for doing so. And so the trust is broken. There appear to be attempts to rebuild, but as the election approaches, we're getting close to sending out ballots here. So it's unlikely that for this election, the federal government's going to be offering any support, to threats that come up.
And the reporting that you and your colleagues have done is based on interviews with about 30 current or former executive branch officials who are familiar with the work of Trump loyalists installed in election roles. Are you finding I guess what is the process of trying to get people to talk about what is happening right now?
Well, it's tricky, to say the least. Like I said before, we have these, spreadsheets where we're trying to get people to talk to us, just making calls, and just emphasizing that we are taking their, their request to be anonymous seriously because they have the expertise and knowledge of what's going on in the inside, but they would never want to put, their careers at risk. And so, making sure we have all protections in place to make sure we're not exposing any of our sourcing, and also just understanding that some people are not going to be able to talk until they leave the government.
Wow.
So it's just a tricky balance right now.
What would you say to voters? We often, around election time, recommend that people make sure that their name is on the voting rolls, make sure that they know if they're voting in person where to go. Given what this administration is doing, what message do you think is important to send to voters to ensure that they can vote and ensure that their vote will count?
I think it's important for voters to just be aware of potential changes, either at the state or the federal level, and to check their voting eligibility on official government websites. Don't rely on AI or on other things to search for information about elections, and just keep in touch, keep aware of your record as the election approaches. Make sure you're on the voter rolls, make sure your polling place is the same, all of those same things that are recommended, but it's even more crucial now.
Gosh, so that we really have a public service, a role to play, just to let people know what to do, especially if they live in a state where it's hard to vote. I mean, here in California, it can't be easier. I get my ballot in the mail and I can mail it back or put it in a drop box. It's so easy. But that's not the case in a lot of states in this country.
It's not the case, and there's been a lot of state laws that have changed under the guise of election security that are making it harder to cast ballots. For example, some states have cut off time after election day to get your ballots in, where you have to get it in by election day. I know California has a little bit of a grace period on this. I believe I hope I'm not spreading misinformation there. I
No, you're
believe there's a
right.
little, yes.
You're
And
right.
so I think some of those grace periods are now gone, and the public may not know that yet. So I think it's just important to make sure you know the rules, get your ballots in early, all of those things.
On today's Media Roundtable, we are speaking with Jen Fifield, a ProPublica reporter covering election-related issues, voting rights, and threats to democracy. Jen and her colleagues are doing such important reporting about Trump's failed hunt for non-citizen voters. We'll talk about that soon. And then what Jen has been talking about, all of these election deniers that are now in very critical positions in election departments. Jen, what do we need to know about some of these characters? A lot of these people, probably most of us, have never heard of. Heather Honey is a high-profile election denier. She's been appointed to a senior position in the Department of Homeland Security. She will help oversee the nation's election infrastructure. She's a protege of Cleta Mitchell, a lawyer who tried to help Trump overturn the 2020 election results. What do we need to know about some of these election deniers who are now in high positions of power?
Well, I think with, Honey and with others within DOJ, there's someone named Eric Neff who is working on the voting rights section now within the Department of Justice. In the past, they have either spread election misinformation or worked on attempts to help overturn the election for Trump in 2020, and now are being asked to do extraordinary measures to try to, he says, secure elections further. And so, we see Honey in internal communications pushing forward things like trying to get states to turn over their voter rolls to find potential non-citizens on them. Eric Neff has been leading the effort to collect those voter rolls. So we just see these people in pretty key positions trying to, like I said before, find a way to enforce executive orders from Trump. And it doesn't seem like the career staff that's been in the voting section or in the Department of Homeland Security is in any position to fight back against what Trump ultimately wants on these missions.
You interviewed Brendan Fisher, director at the Campaign Legal Center, a nonpartisan pro-democracy legal organization, who said it's not just last-minute slapdash attempts to overturn the results, as in 2020, but more systematic efforts to influence how elections are run months ahead of time. I mean, what are people most concerned about? What could possibly happen? What should people prepare for?
Well, I think that there's, obviously things that people are talking about behind the scenes, but you never want to, you want to plan for worst case scenario, and I think that's what the state local, attorney generals are doing. What happens if, our voting systems are deemed inadequate ahead of the election is one concern that I've heard from state officials. What happens if the federal government tries to seize more materials before the election and it leaves us empty-handed? There's things that people are preparing for, but don't really have, we don't really have any solid evidence that they're moving forward with. There's other things such as, the Department of Homeland Security has told states, if you don't search for non-citizens in your voter rolls in certain ways, we're going to shut down your federal Homeland Security funding and grants for other areas that you work on. And so that's also something that they're fighting against. They still need the little federal funding they get to operate elections is now at risk right ahead of the election. So there's what's really coming true, and then there's also what they're trying to prepare for.
What would you say are the differences between, I don't even want to say Democratic-controlled states and Republican-controlled states, because as we saw in 2020, a lot of Republicans stood up to Trump. I guess the question would be, what's the difference between people who are in line with Trump and his election lies and people who are not? I mean, what happens in a state where Trump election-denying supporters are in charge of elections?
So I think we see this in, maybe about half of the Republican Secretary of States. Those are the state officials that oversee elections, where they're really trying to go along with Trump's ideas on elections. And this is where also state lawmakers are passing laws. Like I said, the elimination of grace periods is one example, but there's also been tightening on voter eligibility, what constitutes a ID that you can bring to the polls, where you place polling locations, all of these other decisions being made at the state level to change state laws, to change different eligibility requirements like proving your citizenship when you register to vote. And that's the big difference I see between the states that are, willing to say, no, we run our own elections, and the states that are saying, well, if Trump wants this and the administration wants this, then we should do something at the state level.
What can Democrats do to make sure we do not have a chaotic and rigged election?
Well, I think Democrats generally, like I said, attorney generals in the Democratic states have pushed back on almost every area that Trump has tried to change nationwide on elections and said, let the states control how and when we vote. And I think that there's been a lot of success on that front to block these efforts in those states. As far as, voters, I haven't seen much. We see it definitely with redistricting, the push to do mid-cycle redistricting. We see a lot of pushback from Democratic voters that want civil rights protections and want fair districts in their area that have been speaking out and rallying this year. But as far as, some of these incremental changes that have happened, we haven't seen much from voters saying, no, we're not going to do this. It's mainly been at the state level.
And again, we have such an important role to play to educate voters about what is happening, about how to make sure that their vote is counted. Jen, what are you and your colleagues planning to write about and investigate in the coming months now that the midterms are right around the corner?
They are. We have a long list of investigations that we hope to get out very soon. One area that I'm really watching closely is the attempt to change the Postal Service. And there was just a final rule issued on Friday on this that could make it all the way up to the Supreme Court before Election Day. And that would require the Postal Service to get lists of voters from each state, and these voters are the only voters that would be eligible to vote by mail. Election officials are very concerned about that rule for many reasons. They, of course, don't think the federal government or USPS should have any right to decide who gets a mail ballot and who doesn't. USPS has said that they aren't going to try to block mail ballots if they find that people are not on these lists. But there is worry about that. The rule is blocked right now, but like I said, it could come before the court even before Election Day.
Jen Fifield is a ProPublica reporter covering election-related issues, voting rights, and threats to democracy. Jen, thank you so much for your reporting and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Coming up after a break, we will learn more about Homeland Security Investigates, which has deployed its tech platform to find non-citizens on voter rolls, despite warnings from agency insiders that it would lead to an ungodly number of false positives. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. We'll be back after this. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we'd like to welcome Peter Elkind to the show. Peter is an award-winning journalist covering government and business for ProPublica. And Peter Elkind is co-author of the national best-selling book, The Smartest Guys in the Room: The Amazing Rise and Scandalous Fall of Enron. Peter worked on the investigation, Trump's Failed Hunt for Non-Citizen Voters. Hi, Peter. Thank you so much for your important work and thank you for joining us.
Very good to be with you, Rose.
Great to have you. So we just spoke with your colleague Jen Fifield, and I want to ask you the same question I asked Jen. This could be one of the most critical midterms in the US, given what's at stake. So much is riding on these midterms. And given that, Trump is once again working so hard to cast doubt on election integrity. What would you say is different about Trump's second term? And what concerns you and the people that you interviewed the most about the upcoming midterms?
No, that's a great question, and I think there's a whole lot different, and it's certainly the case with elections, as it is with immigration enforcement and so many other areas. He has taken it up several notches, and the administration has taken up several notches to try to impose his will on how our democracy works, how our government works, how he personally believes the world should look and act, and so that. You see that in all sorts of things, from the appearance of the Rose Garden and the creation of a ballroom and Indy cars in the streets of Washington, D.C., but also even more importantly in how election rules are being enforced and efforts are being made to limit how people can vote.
Even though non-citizens voting is exceedingly rare, they're still going for that. What explains that?
That's also a good question because, one of the big takeaways from our story is there's this enormous effort, including the sort of weaponization or use of an enormous law enforcement force within the Department of Homeland Security to pursue tens of thousands of leads of alleged non-citizen voters, illegal voters. And the results have been incredibly meager, and that was predictable because the incidence of non-citizen voting is extremely rare. The incidence of all kinds of illegal voting is extremely rare, despite what Trump has repeatedly said about, it altering elections. And so, as you say, that begs the question of what's the real agenda here? And, the feeling from a lot of people we spoke to is that it's to cast doubt on how our system works and on our democracy, and possibly to set the stage for very extreme actions on the part of the administration.
As you and your colleagues report, despite intense White House pressure, this effort has produced only a few dozen non-citizen voter prosecutions nationwide and even fewer convictions. Peter, we spoke with Jen about the really great work you all do at ProPublica and how sometimes these investigations can take months, even more than a year. Can you tell us what is involved in uncovering what Trump is trying to do with elections? In this case, his failed hunt for non-citizen voters. What's involved in the reporting process?
Well, this story sort of went down several trails, I think all of which, several of which were have really not been reported, and we tried to advance the ball in lots of ways. And one of the central areas where which we focused on was looking at how a particular department, an investigative agency in the Department of Homeland Security, called Homeland Security Investigations, has been turned to investigating non-citizen voters. And this is actually the second largest investigative law enforcement agency in the government. Its normal work is investigating cross-border crime, really bad stuff, drug cartels, terrorism, child trafficking, human trafficking, stopping the flow of fentanyl. That's what their normal work is. And the administration has to repurpose this very large agency, a criminal investigative agency with agents all over the country and across the world, actually, to look into non-citizen voting. Which again, by all accounts, is not a big problem, not affecting elections, not involving very many people. And nonetheless, these agents who are have got serious work to do, major work to do, have been diverted in large part. First, to immigration enforcement, which they are loath to do. And then, secondly, to this non-citizen voting effort to uncover that. So, that was one of the things we began to focus on fairly early on. And we dug deeply into, how they were using the Department of Homeland Security Investigations agents to look into this. And that took several months.
It was so interesting to learn that current and former HSI, again, this is Homeland Security Investigations, including task forces aimed at drug rings, human trafficking, and money laundering, have languished as the agency has pivoted to take on non-citizen voting and immigration enforcement. In February of this year, according to court files and emails reviewed by you and your colleagues, an HSI agent in Ohio who'd been leading a multi-state child sex abuse investigation was abruptly assigned to pursue dozens of leads of suspected non-citizen voters, work that took months. And it wasn't until May that he made an arrest in the other case. Prosecutors have filed child exploitation and porn charges against this man in connection with acts involving at least five 14-year-old girls. I mean, this is just devastating. Who is making these decisions? Well, first off, this whole story about this man is devastating. But who's making the decisions to take people off of like a child sex abuse case and putting them on a non-citizen voter case?
Well, it's very clear that the broader enterprise and the sort of mission that's been laid out has been laid out very much from the top, namely by the president and by the White House. A key player in all of this is in the White House, a fellow named Anthony Salisbury, Tony Salisbury. He is a deputy to Stephen Miller in the White House, And he's also running the Homeland Security Investigations Agency as well. So he's sort of got two tasks, and he's doing it in a very, very hands-on way, and carrying out the imperatives and directives of the White House and of the Trump administration and of the president himself.
You write that Salisbury, he's a 50-year-old career agent who ran the agency's Miami office. He is a mixed martial arts enthusiast. To agency veterans, he was forever linked to a 2011 operation he'd overseen in Mexico, in which one agent was killed and another wounded in a highway ambush by a drug cartel. An agency review submitted to Trump in April 2020 concluded that errors by HSI supervisors, including Anthony Salisbury, contributed to the outcome. It urged the administration to consider disciplinary action, but none was taken against Salisbury, and he did not respond to your requests for an interview.
Yes, no, that's right. He did not respond. The administration did defend him, and made the point that while there had been a recommendation to consider discipline against all the people who had supervised this operation that turned into a disaster, he was not disciplined, and that subsequently he was promoted multiple times, which is correct. That is true. The striking point about him, and on the point, the question you asked about who's really running the show is. Here's a guy who's in the White House. He's a deputy Homeland Security advisor, and he is day to day really running Homeland Security investigations and directing which agents are promoted, where resources go, what the priorities are going to be, and certainly very involved personally in the effort to find and try to prosecute non-citizen voters.
You report that early last year, he's the one who oversaw the unprecedented reassignment of more than 6,000 agents to immigration enforcement. He then pointed HSI at non-citizen voting. Is anyone speaking out against this, or are people too afraid to go on the record?
Well, there are alumni of HSI and others who are not happy about it and have spoken out against it some publicly. Within the agency, there's not really much room for dissent. I mean, they have they issue orders and redirect people to tasks that have never been the responsibility of Homeland Security investigations. And the agents, it's really sort of a military. It's a sort of a military command structure almost. While a lot of people, a lot of agents within HSI don't like it at all, there's not really much room to dissent. And the option a lot of older agents who have pursued is simply retiring. Morale has dropped, and a lot of people who are, as they've qualified for retirement, have retired. In one case, we're told on the day somebody turned the right age in order to qualify for retirement.
Wow.
They're wasting no time because they're very frustrated that they're having to do this work that they don't care for, that they think is not important, and produces very little result.
You know, Peter, this reminds me of the first Trump term when you had a lot of Trump supporters working on elections teams. And even though they were Trump supporters, they said, no, you did not win the election. Election integrity is in place. But this time around is so different because they worked so hard to make sure anyone who might stand up against them would not work with them. So they're all yes men and women. I mean, we learned a lot about this in the reporting that your colleagues did at ProPublica around Project 2025 and the interview process. So that's another major difference in Trump's second term.
That's exactly right. I mean, a tremendous number of the guardrails that limit what government officials, top government officials, can do that offer oversight of their actions, of conflicts of interest, of whether they're following the rules and laws or not, have been eliminated. And, in cases where the positions haven't been eliminated, key positions have been filled with essentially those who will not question what is going on, who are, true believers and certainly professed believers that the 2020 election was stolen, that what Trump is doing is something that's imperative to protect democracy. So yes, there's not much dissent going on within this administration, and there's very little tolerance for it as well.
On today's Media Roundtable, we're speaking with Peter Elkind, an award-winning journalist covering government and business for ProPublica. Peter worked on the investigation, Trump's failed hunt for non-citizen voters. He's co-author of the national best-selling book, The Smartest Guys in the Room: The Amazing Rise and Scandalous Fall of Enron. So, Peter, even though non-citizens voting is exceedingly rare, Trump gave a nationally televised speech that the election system was, quote, so vulnerable that no one can possibly defend it. He said that there were more than 250,000 non-citizens on voter rolls in just four states, all led by Democrats. The documents included no explanation of how that number was calculated. And something that was very disturbing in your piece is that the DOJ is transferring or has transferred voter rolls to Homeland Security Investigation to enable it to search for non-citizens. According to interviews and internal emails you all reviewed, career staffers at the DOJ warned that transferring voter rolls to HSI to enable it to search for non-citizens could violate federal privacy laws. So, can you tell us more about how this is all happening?
Sure. Well, there are very strict rules that have always been in place and have been followed about transfer of confidential data, of citizen data between government agencies. There's supposed to be very clear disclosure of proposals to move data from one place to another and a very clear need for that to take place. There are limited exceptions where the rules don't have to, the disclosure rules and considerations don't have to be followed in quite the same way. One of them is a law enforcement exception, and that's kind of the truck that the Department of Justice and Homeland Security is, the hole, I should say, they've driven, tried to drive, it, drive a truck through in terms of sharing information. The Trump administration broadly has, loosened and ignored rules about data sharing across the board, but, with the notion that what belongs to the government can be shared almost anywhere throughout the government. But in this case, the issue was sharing voter rolls that had been collected by the Justice Department Civil Rights Division with Homeland Security investigations for criminal enforcement. And there was much debate about, how that could be done and consideration of, how they could do it. And the chief privacy officer for the Justice Department had said, in order to avoid exposing the information from millions of law-abiding citizens, the way it should be done would be not to transfer the voter rolls en masse to Homeland Security investigations, not just to hand them over, but rather for them to be communication between Homeland Security investigations and justice, and for just and for Homeland Security investigations to say, here are the people we want information about, and please give us information about that limited number of targets. That's the way it had always been done, that the Homeland Security investigations has a lot of criminal law enforcement authority, but they were gained access to lots of confidential stuff when they were targeting specific bad guys. They weren't just getting wholesale access to information about millions of Americans to look for people they suspected were doing something wrong.
And when you think about the information that they are collecting, a lot of that is sensitive. You report that even the public versions, which political parties and candidates routinely obtained to target ads and messages, include voters' addresses, birth dates, party affiliations. For the 16 states that have agreed to share their unredacted voter lists, the DOJ has citizens' partial social security numbers or driver's license information. And as you report and say, career attorneys at the DOJ say that this might not even be legal.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And as I said, there was a lot of discussion and consideration of what should and shouldn't be done and could and couldn't be done. And I described how the chief, what they decided to do was to pursue this law enforcement exception, which required that that the head of Homeland Security or an official at Homeland Security, in this case, the head of acting head of ICE, send a letter to DOJ asking for the information. And citing its need for law enforcement criminal investigations. And this draft letter, the draft letter was actually written by the chief privacy officer at DOJ. And he wrote the first draft of it, and he wrote and he was concerned about how this was being done. And this is according to an email that we've obtained, which we quote in our story. And he said, he wrote this to colleagues at DOJ about how they should proceed. And it was saying that instead of simply handing over the voter rolls, he wanted to have DHS, Homeland Security, request just the limited information about specific people, and then having the technical staffs coordinate about how to fulfill those limited requests. He wrote, and this is a quote, "Having slept on it, I ended up deciding that our initial idea of sending a huge amount of raw, unprocessed voter registration data to DHS involved taking far too much unnecessary legal risk, given that 99% of the data would implicate the privacy and civil liberties of United States citizens and would risk adding to the false narrative in the establishment press of DOJ and DHS being unconcerned with the privacy and civil liberties of Americans." So he rewrote the draft to wrote the draft to be very limited, and made that point, which is this is the way we should go. In pretty short order, that was overruled, and the final draft letter, the final letter that was submitted, allowed wholesale transfer of the roles from the Justice Department to DHS.
Going back to what's at stake here, I mean, the AP reports that Democratic voters are showing up for this year's primaries in numbers not seen in decades. The Republican Party obviously knows this. They know that people are angry about the high cost of gas, the high cost of goods, the war on Iran, tariffs, so many other issues. You report that Trump, in addition to trying to find these non-citizens, again, it's exceedingly rare. Trump is also pressuring Republicans to pass the SAVE Act. That would require people to provide proof of citizenship when registering to vote. Advocates say that's a huge barrier to voting. You report that Democrats are preparing for the prospect of federal troops being sent to the polls to intimidate voters. How far do you think Republicans, well, I should say Trump Republicans, are willing to go in the midterms?
Well, that remains to be seen, of course. But if you take the president at his word and the administration at its collective word, they're threatening all kinds of things that have never been done, and pursuing and pressing for all sorts of actions that have never been done. They have encouraged the reduction in the number of polling places, reduction in the number of days that people can vote. Restrictions on mail-in voting, which is, something that's pending before the Supreme Court as we speak. There's an enormous number of actions that are being taken that are either, that are aimed at restricting who can vote and how many people vote. And it's all sort of done in the name, supposedly, of voter integrity, which is a problem by all account of all experts, is really not a significant problem.
What do you think citizens should do to ensure that they are on the voter roll, they know where they're supposed to vote, especially if they don't have mail-in voting like we do in California, and ensure that their vote is actually counted?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's particularly important because there are local election officials who are themselves election deniers now.
Right.
I mean, it used to be particularly bipartisan group, non-ideological, who cared to make sure that people were properly registered, but if they were properly registered, that they were able to vote, the franchise was exercised as widely as possible. There are definitely concerns about people being struck from the rolls improperly. And so a very wise thing to do would be, one, to check with your local county officials to make sure you are registered, that you have the proper name, that they have the proper address, that you're good to go. Another thing that would be wise would be to go to vote early. And, there certainly is early voting in almost all states, as I recall. And the sooner you can do it, the sooner you'll learn if there is any sort of problem with your registration or how they have you on the list. And if there's a conflict or issue that has to be resolved, it will give you time to resolve that.
What about pushback against this, Peter? What are you hearing from Democrats and election advocates?
Well, I mean, there's been enormous pushback on the part of, Democrats and, as you say, election advocates, League of Women Voters and other groups that, again, have historically been nonpartisan, but expressing great concern that, the franchise to vote is being restricted, that there's efforts to keep people from voting instead of to encourage them to vote. So there has also obviously been a lot of litigation on various fronts here, and there's advocacy groups that promise to send workers to the polls, poll watchers, lawyers, have people on standby. It all poses the sort of specter of potential confrontations at the polls in ways that just hasn't happened before. It's worrisome on multiple fronts. We hope for the best, but clearly Democrats and voter advocates, are expressing concern and somewhat fearful for the worst.
And we have such an important role to play in terms of providing a public service for people, letting them know what is happening, and then letting them know how to make sure they're on the rolls and that their vote is counted. What are you and your colleagues at ProPublica planning to do in the coming months, given that the midterms are right around the corner?
Well, we're definitely going to continue to write about and expose, efforts, issues around voter security, on red about registration, on access to mail-in voting, and where there are issues that of accountability, where restrictions are being imposed, which shouldn't be imposed. We intend to write about that and are going to follow this all very closely as we have before.
Peter Elkind is an award-winning journalist covering government and business for ProPublica. Peter worked on the investigation Trump's failed hunt for non-citizen voters. You can find it at ProPublica.org or KALW.org. Click News and Your Call. Peter Elkind is co-author of the national bestseller, The Smartest Guys in the Room: The Amazing Rise and Scandalous Fall of Enron. Peter, thank you so much for your important reporting, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. And thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your Calls Media Roundtable.